On the podcast today, we've got Richard Kennedy. Richard's an SE with Cumulo and is live and in person. So great to see somebody different other than the Storage Review crew and my family. So need to have Richard in from Columbus area. Came down. We did a live cast earlier in the day. So if you're into the video thing, definitely check out our YouTube channel. So you can see the Cumulo interface and the cluster that we have. We went through most of the features and highlights, so that's pretty cool. And in this podcast, we talk a little bit more of the same about Cumulo, but also dive into the role of an SE, thinking about all these young people in school with an IT background, you know, what these jobs look like in the real world and what you do. So we had that conversation. And we also got into some hot sports talk at the end with him being a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, much to my disappointment. So anyway, join in, and I think you'll like this conversation. Today on the podcast, I've got Richard Kennedy, storage architect. Is that right?
Storage architect, systems engineer. All of it. All of the above, pre-sales guy, whatever you want to call me.
For Cumulo.
Cumulo, yep.
Cumulo. So take a minute. What's Cumulo do, first of all, for those that may not know?
Great. Yeah, so Cumulo is a software-defined storage company. We can deploy on-premise or in a multi-cloud environment or a combination of both. We consider ourselves a different kind of storage company.
And different in your attitude, your deployment, different in all of it?
All of it. It's a refreshing look on how we do things. We're a distributed file system. That's all we do. We start small, scale massively. We have a couple core default values. Two of my favorites are we share everything. We share by default.
Okay.
So if I'm in front of a customer, I'm telling them the good and the bad. We also have something called Get Stuff Done. It's actually used the other word, but since we're on a podcast, it's stuff, right? That's my favorite one. It's like, okay, here, get this done. Like, go, do it, make it happen. And we do that with everything in the company. We've had feature releases because a customer said, hey, we want to be able to do this. What could you do that? Could you help us get that feature, that functionality, whatever?
And that flexibility is probably uncommon. I mean, you've been with other storage and IT vendors in the past. I mean, the big guys can't do that. That's not a motion that they know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I came from a very large hardware vendor, and it was, you know, we had some innovation, but for the most part, everything was already baked 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
Where everything we're doing is on a 2-week turn now. If there's a customer says this would be kind of cool if we could do that, well, what's that look like? For instance, data encryption at rest,
right,
was something that was needed. It got a lot of attention earlier this year. We just today announced it's out. So it's in our product. Any new Cumulo cluster that lands on the ground or lands wherever will be encrypted at rest.
So we just did the live cast. So if you're listening to this pod and don't know, on YouTube, Richard and I did a live cast together where we pulled up the 5-node cluster that we have and went through it and talked about the features and capabilities, showed how a lot of the stuff worked, and also showed that we are woefully behind in our updates. So we cannot do the encryption, but we can fix it.
You can fix it.
Right. We can fix it. Right. This is interesting because we get some users or listeners to the pod that are in school. So we get a lot of IT kids that are thinking about what's next. So normally on the pod, we'll have some high level marketing guys. Okay. Right. So this is interesting because now we're talking with a guy that actually knows something. All right. So we got a head start.
Dangerous.
Yeah. We got a head start already. But talk about your role, because I think that's kind of interesting in terms of what is that job. And if you're a young kid in IT thinking about where you might want to go, just tell me a little bit, what is the life of an SE or however you describe yourself?
So I started. It's last century, I guess, right? I actually started as a sysadmin. I worked for a trucking company, and I was the guy keeping the systems up and running. And then I worked for the state for a little while, sysadmin, moved to a very large company, went from a big fish to a little fish, big pond, whatever.
Right.
But it was fun. But what got me was, you know, the day-to-day stuff is fun, and I was really good at it. And I mean, go into weeds, and I was doing things that, you know, today, to this day, I'm like, man, I can't believe we actually made that work. It was, you know, make this thing fail over when it's not supposed to do, or whatever.
Right.
And then I got into the point, it's like, you know what? I had more fun putting stuff in place, building infrastructures and things. So I'm like, I'm going to see if I can get down that road. And ended up moving into a partner role where I was the hands-on guy. I wasn't the day-to-day anymore. I was the, you know, day one through day seven, and now you have the rest.
Okay.
And then morphed from there into actually a pre-sales where I go in and help customers, you know, solve business problems, make their infrastructure more efficient. You know, they can be more focused on making money instead of solving problems.
So let's stop there for a minute. Pre-sales in your role versus sales guy, like how do those go together in your vision or in your experience?
Yeah.
And what's the difference? So if I'm thinking about, again, as someone coming out of school and hopefully, you know, this job market firms up and people right. get back to work, as I'm thinking about where I could target myself based on my interests or whatever, like how do you think about sales guy versus more of a technical role where you are?
Yeah, so I look at it probably pretty easily. I'm responsible for the tech and making sure it's the right product for the right, it's the right solution.
Okay.
And the sales guy's making sure that it's the right price for the customer.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. So is in that specific function too, you're pitching your stuff, Cumulo Now, but before whatever, but in that role, then you still have to be knowledgeable about all your competitors too, right? Because
right.
This is the part of the process where I might, if I'm buying, might have you in and Dell and HP, whoever, right? Bring in all your stuff, show it to me. And then, you know, somewhere along the line, based on price from the sales guy, we'll make some sort of decision. But your knowledge from a competitive landscape has got to be pretty sharp, too.
Yeah. I don't watch any of these shows, but picture Bachelor and Bachelorette.
Right? how do you know about them actively watching them?
I know people that talk about it. Okay. You're right.
You heard a thing.
Yeah, you're right. I have to know our product inside and out. Or if I don't know, I have to know who I can ask. Say, hey, this came up. I'm pretty sure we can do that, but how?
Right.
And get that answer. And then as far as from the competitive standpoint, it's more of, I like to look at it, us versus them. You know, it's like there was a couple questions on the live cast.
Right.
I knew that question came up, and I'm like, oh, I know who that guy works for. Because I knew the question. I knew exactly what he was talking about. And that's just, you know, a lot of that's just learn as you go. And again, ask somebody, like, I used to sell different storage arrays. I know how those work. I have a team. I'm on a team of, I think there's 7 or 8 of us. We all have some tie to some other vendor.
Sure.
So we can like, hey, how's it work in that world if we don't know for sure? And then, you know, okay, well, this is what, you know, the customer's asking us for. And okay, here's how we would go around that or work around it or make that work.
Okay.
Yeah. What you don't do is stand in front of the room and call them names and this and that. Like,
yeah,
oh,
it doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That doesn't work.
Right.
So you guys are selling in the NAS space that's been pretty competitive. I mean, obviously, I don't expect you to pitch against, you know, the competitors right now, but, you know, the world knows Isilon or now PowerScale as they've rebranded. I mean, HP's got solutions. There's a number of other SDS solutions. What's the trick for Cumulo, and in your role, you know, because you've got to go do this, to differentiate between what you guys offer and what everyone else has got to offer?
Right. I think the biggest thing is, we're new.
Okay.
Been around 7-8 years. Product's been out about 4 or 5.
I guess that's still new, that's new-ish.
New-ish, right? But we were written in the modern, we'll call it the modern era.
Okay.
A lot of our competition was created when hard drives were 36 gigs, right? We have, you know, thumb drives bigger than that now. And when we look at that, we were written for the petabyte world, and a lot of our other products were written for the, you know, terabyte world.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have massive scale. We're massively scalable. We go to quintillions, I don't even know how you describe that, but
it's big.
It's big. Yeah. We have a customer. They have over 10 billion files on a 13-node cluster.
It's hard to imagine.
Yes.
That many files.
Yeah. It's just crazy.
Crazy. Yeah, to create that many and then to be able to use them. So that's the other thing too, right?
Right.
Is you can hold all this stuff, but then how do we make it actionable?
Right.
And that's another whole set of problems.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I mean, we looked at it, cumulatively, the creators and vendors said, we need a different way. You know, we've got to be cloud focused. We've got to be easy to use, but we have to be massively scalable. And those three things, at least in my mind, are differentiators pretty much across everybody. There are companies that are in clouds, but are they really in the cloud or are they next to it?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, hey, you can go to, you know, the cloud vendors out there and we're there. We're in their data centers. And you can do everything in the cloud with us, or you can do it all on premise, or you can do a hybrid, mix it, mix match, whatever is needed. It's your data. Use it where you need to, where use it, how and where you need to use it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're speaking of cloud, and we talked a little bit about it on the live cast. You guys announced a couple weeks ago Shift,
yep.
which is an initiative to be able to push some data, selection of data to an object store, S3, and then be able to leverage those compute resources dynamically, whatever you need to do on that data. Is that about right?
That's the best way to sum it up, yeah.
Okay.
So we move it from the format on the Cumulo, regardless of where the Cumulo is sitting. Again, it could be sitting in the cloud on-premise, and do a one-time push to an S3 bucket in native S3 format, and then use those cloud tools to change that file around, change its format, pull information out of it, and again, do with it what you need to do to make better business decisions or get to market faster or do a remote shoot for a TV show or something. It's a changer, and that will continue to evolve as well. We're going to continue to add features to that as it gets more and more like, okay, what's next for this?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting angle in terms of being able to leverage all these instances. There's so many. It's like every day there's another compute right. instance, another GPU instance. Now there's all these AMD instances. NVIDIA's got these guys adopting their new A100 GPUs. I mean, there's so much of this technology. And I think one of the problems with any of the emerging technology is that it's really cool, really fast. It's better for your AI, your inference, your analytics, your whatever. But the investment from a hardware standpoint to stand all that up in your data center may not necessarily be feasible if you can't use it all the time.
Right.
So if I need GPUs, but I only need them for, 3 hours on Tuesday when I run this job, does it make sense to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in a cluster there when I can spin that up? So I think it's an interesting use case when you think about data portability, when you think about these new instances that are coming online every day that Amazon manages and you don't have to add that to your stack.
Right.
There's some value there probably.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're seeing that it's the news of the day, right? We have this pandemic going on.
Yeah, I've
heard. Well, there's a little bit, yeah. So there's a lot more research that's happening now. What's the quickest way to do that? Spin it up. You can go and procure, and how long does that take? Or you could go pick your multi-cloud vendor, whatever, go there, spin up the instances, spin up the storage, do the research, get the results. Great. We have the vaccine, or we have this or whatever. And take that. Okay. Now turn it all off.
Right.
And now you save it, move on, and do the next thing. As opposed to still sitting in on-premise, it's still consuming power, cooling, whatever. Yeah. And the people to manage all of it.
Yeah, the people is just the hard part too, because as orgs are trying to be more lean, I mean, we're all fighting that same challenge, right? Of how do we stay operational? How do we get, streamlined to the extent that as things, come back and markets recover and that sort of thing, that we're ready to go. But yeah, it's difficult. And the cloud resources are definitely going to be a big part of that in terms of giving orgs flexibility, scalability, all those sorts of things to be able to keep cruising.
Right. Yep.
So yeah. As you think about, you're living it from a sales role in Ohio area. What are you guys seeing on the ground? Are you still seeing people, customers out there still looking, still buying, or what's going on?
It's really a mixed bag. We can't pinpoint, which markets or verticals or whatever are going to do things. My peers up in the Chicago area, they're seeing almost a complete different story.
Really? It's that localized?
Yeah.
Wow.
They were like, yeah, these customers in this vertical, they're not doing anything.
Okay.
And we're like, well, that's interesting because we've got them down here. They're moving ahead. And it's like, you know, I think part of it is what the vertical that customer's in. Mm-hmm. You know, some things really, they have changed. They may not have stopped.
Right.
You know, take banking, for instance. Mm-hmm. That's really still going on. But maybe a car dealer, that's completely different.
Right.
So, yeah, it really varies. We wish we could have a handle on it because it'd make us a little more efficient. But at this point, we're just trying to, you know, talk to who we can talk to, service the customers we have, and, you know, help people make better, you know, help people if they need to make a change or whatever they need to do, help them out with that.
So the main thing, I think, is from a Cumulo selling point standpoint, has got to be UI, ease of management, ease of total cost of ownership because it's so much easier.
Right.
I assume that's what your customers are saying.
Yeah, I mean, we have a single interface to run the entire system. And it's the same interface, whether it's on-premise or in a cloud environment.
Okay.
The functionality is the same. It works the same. So what, you know, used to be maybe two or three different interfaces to do the work that needs to be done for that storage admin, we just give them one. We give them visibility into the data as well. It's not just going in and saying, oh, create a file share, add these users, put a quote on, go. We're like, no, show me where all this load's coming from. You know, you get a ticket in your help desk or a phone call. Hey, you know, users are logging on and things are slow. It's like, well, let me take a look at the storage. And it's like, we're fine. You know, something else is going on. Or we could say, oh, yeah, that system there with that IP and that name, there must be a rogue process or something going on because that's not normal. And then you can pinpoint that in minutes, potentially, as opposed to maybe, it happened again today. Let's see what we can figure it out. Oh, then the next day. Really take out that, you know, I don't know what's going on in my world and say, no, here, you do know. It's all right here. You can see all of it.
In that interface you're talking about is that sort of fan out view where you can see, but you can see both the activity from the client side, but also if there's a specific file or something on your system that's getting hammered for whatever reason, you've got that visibility as well.
Right. Yeah, we can go from this client's doing something to, oh my gosh, what's going on with that whole file system all the way down and pinpoint, well, that says .tmp at the end of it,
yeah.
And it keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. That's probably a problem.
Yeah. And that's neat visibility from the storage standpoint to have that you don't always get.
Yeah.
So our cluster here is a five node, 1U, real dense. We've got 240, I almost said petabytes. Something less than a petabyte, 24% of a petabyte in our cluster. Is that a normal sort of thing for you guys? What do you see, at least in this region, of what you're selling in terms of a first cluster?
Yeah, that typically, maybe that usually a little larger.
Okay.
Somewhere, again, it's based on the business and what they're doing with it. We typically average, you know, corporate average, they say, is about 500 terabytes, which could still be 5 use.
Right.
Because we have, you know, there's various models. Usually in that 500, but we can start as small as 80 terabytes. We can do that today and then grow from there. And then from a growth perspective, based on the software, the code, there's always a theoretical limit, but it's pretty big.
And is the cloud instance any different in terms of how small someone might start in the cloud versus on-prem?
We can start much smaller in the cloud.
Okay.
I feel like the cloud can 10 terabytes-ish.
Okay.
I'd have, depending on, but that's probably a safe number that I won't have to walk back later.
So do you have customers that'll do a POC just in the cloud? Is that an easier modality to get someone access to it? Or what are your other choices there?
So you could do it that way. We also actually have a virtual appliance that full functionality, exactly the same code as our production, either cloud or on-premise solution. And that runs in a virtual environment, but all the software, all of it all works together. It can talk to a production array, the production array can talk to it. And again, it works exactly the same, except there's no, can't put any production data on it.
Sure.
But it's supported the same way. It's fully functional.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, that's neat. I always think about, because for so long, the VSA was like a hot thing for a while, trying to disaggregate the operating system and file system from the hardware,
right?
Which you talked about some of the legacy storage players or those that have been around, you know, longer than you guys. And that was one of their things for a long time, was to try to ease the access into this thing, give it to you in a VM or some other way so that you could play with it without having to take, you know, a rack dropped off for 6 months before you could, you know, find a way to do your full POC. And I think, I guess from a sales standpoint, it's probably a useful tool to help get past the initial round of cuts of like, who's obviously not a fit for what we want to do here,
right,
without investing too much time in the full POC for, you know, 5 or 6 vendors, which can,
right,
it can just kill you from an org standpoint.
Yeah. I mean, we can, it's probably half an hour to spin up the virtual environment and get it tied into your environment, get all the users on it, get all the shares on it, and say, okay, what do we test? You know, where's your test plan? Let's go.
Right.
We can do that. And it'll take longer probably to read the test plan than it would be to actually build the environment to do the test plan.
So in terms of what you guys are doing with your offering, there's the normal media and entertainment thing, research, HPC, maybe a little bit, healthcare. What, I mean, you've been at this now for a little while. I mean, you haven't been with Cumulo that long, but what are you seeing that you didn't expect, or what's been interesting that you weren't expecting to see?
I was worried the video surveillance,
okay,
and the things around that, that's not just catch it for a little while. Some people are catching it for a while and then deleting it. There are other use cases where they're catching this video surveillance and they're keeping it and they're using it for research.
Okay.
And typically it's around medical space. And so if something happens, they can go back, oh, wait a minute, let's pull that back and look, say, oh, okay. Whereas you typically think of video surveillance like the shopping mall, right? And there's some guy staring at a camera.
Right.
And hoping he catches something.
Yeah, waiting for something to go wrong.
Waiting for something to go wrong. Body cams, those are becoming more and more popular. And it's, again, capturing it and then holding it for however long, you know.
For legal risk, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, I mean, in each, what I found was everybody's different. They're like, oh, no, we keep 10 days, that's it. And then after 10, we just roll it off.
Right. I'm
like, wow, okay. And then others are like, no, we have to keep it here for 15, then we can move it over to this one for another 30. And I'm like, okay, so everyone's a little bit different in that. The other case is a lot of people say unstructured data.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times you just think of files.
Yeah, a bunch of file data, right.
It's like, okay, wait a minute. What about machine data that's generated from a manufacturing plant because they need the specs on the steel that's rolling off the line?
Mm-hmm.
And if something happens, they can go back and say, oh, no, that steel was built to the right specs. It was just not properly used or something happened. And, you know, how long do they keep that for? And those are, you know, wee little files, a little text file or something, but a lot of them, right? Yeah.
Yeah, the whole movement around edge devices, Internet of Things, all these little devices that are all spitting off, they may just be little tiny 4K files, but they're, like, to your point, there could be thousands, millions of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking while you were talking on the surveillance side, you know, being in Cincinnati here, we've got a big consumer packaged goods thing with Procter and Kroger. And something that just came across my desk last week or the week before is this concept that marketers at like Procter want this data of what shoppers are doing in the store. And so now we're talking about, I mean, I think we all go into Kroger knowing we're being surveilled, right, to some degree, right?
Punching your phone number and scanning your card, whatever.
Yeah, yeah, but like, is this guy shopping or is he stealing Triscuits, right, or whatever, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know why Triscuits popped in my, I'm not sure there's a big Triscuit theft ring going on. Something more valuable. Is someone putting a lobster in their purse and walking out the store? Because, you know, we want to know that.
Right.
But the brands want to know that too, because if I'm selling skincare and now I can see when you go into that aisle, are my shelf talkers working? Are you looking at the displays I want you to look at? If my, you know, face lotion is on row 3 versus row 4, what does that mean in terms of your eye patterns? And they're recording this and they're making actionable decisions on it. And for Kroger, they want to know, because they want to know how much they can charge you to put your products on the shelf. You know, to get whatever detergent on shelf 4 is going to cost X amount, down here is less. So, you know, that's actionable data. But all of these things are just just coming faster and faster from a data standpoint when you talk unstructured, it's just quite amazing. And then you think about, you know, some of the stuff like car data. Tesla's the famous one, right?
Right.
But there's all these other guys out there trying to figure out how to work on automated driving and all of these things. And that data is a lot of weight at the edge. And then what do you take back to the core? Because you may not want all of it. So I guess I don't really have a question so much in there. But I do wonder, though, what you guys have got to do from a coaching your customer standpoint to help them understand, and maybe they know already, but help them understand what data is relevant.
Like, right.
How do I not store more than I need to?
Right. Yeah. And to your point, a lot of that data you're talking about, it didn't even exist 5 years ago.
No.
You couldn't have a camera that could get that close of recognition to figure that in cars. I had this conversation with my mom. She has an older car that... she has remote start. That is the most advanced feature on her car. And I'm like, Mom, I said, my AC turns down when my phone rings in my car. You know? It knows what's going on.
Right.
But yeah, it's along the lines of the questioning, get them out. You know, we have to understand as a product what companies do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if they're called Acme Corp, it's like, okay, what do they do? And you find out that they're a company that makes everything, right? and so they got a production line, they have a packing line, they also have accounting, marketing, finance, and they're all creating these end products, but there's all details around those products. And to get out of that mindset of, you know, yeah, we're a file system, but files aren't just Word documents and PDFs. They're that data file from that manufacturing of that product and all its specs. They're also all the advertising material around bringing that product to market, the finance around that, all those other things that tie into there. We've had conversations, and this customer, to say they had a lot of VMs is a understatement. They didn't have a lot of hosts, but they had a lot of VMs. And what they said was every time a new project came up, they just spun up another VM, threw a new file share at it, and went. We're like, okay, how much is that? They're like, we've never looked. We just know there's a lot. And all they were seeing were, you know, VMDK files. And we're like, yeah, you have a great array for that, but maybe you don't have the best array for all those files coming off of that. And they're like, okay. And then they also had a cloud push. And they had, they you know, cloud first. And we're like, okay, what does that look like? Well, we're not sure yet. And they were just trying to get their head around all these different pieces and parts. And as we kind of ended the call, they go, this has been really helpful because we didn't realize we had unstructured data all over our data center. We thought we just had a bunch of VMs. We're like, okay, great. And, you know, keep the conversation going.
So when you, that's kind of funny to go through that experience. When you do that, see, they're not really thinking about data life cycles, I don't think, at that point. Are you still talking to customers about active and archive and like some of these sort of fundamental principles around data management?
That comes up. A lot of times it's they're either already doing it or they're investigating. And then they're like, you know, where do you guys work in that? And we're like, well, we partner with someone because we want to be the best file system you can be. Mm-hmm. And let's partner with somebody who wants to be the best data management they can be, as opposed to trying to do everything for everybody at once. That varies from customer to customer. And again, it's also based on the data, but that does come up.
So the nodes that we have are pretty typical, I think, in your use case, although I think they're big in terms of capacity in each mm-hmm. one of these one new things. So we've got a hybrid config. I know you run Flash and all of them for certain components of the systems, but you've got an all NVMe based system now too, which for file storage is, you know, I almost said aggressive. It is a little aggressive. Mm-hmm. Like you're throwing a lot of horsepower at that thing. What are you guys doing with NVMe? What's up with that?
So that's, we're continuing to invest in that. So we do have the all NVMe array. our other arrays are all flash first as well. But specifically in the NVMe space, we're seeing several, I'll just call them wins.
Okay.
High-speed manufacturing with automated artificial intelligence where something's coming down a line and has to be analyzed and checked before it can go to the next stage.
So this isn't Lucy packing up boxes. This is real-time decision-making is correct. What you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah, it comes down, hits a stage, yay or nay, and then down the line. A lot of that wouldn't be possible without an NVMe array.
Okay.
It's also around high-speed video production as well. If somebody is, I heard 8K is coming.
Yeah.
8K, wow.
For sure.
You know, how long is it going to take to render 8K across a traditional NAS array or any type of array at that point? If you can point that at a high-performance all NVMe and have the networking to go with it, maybe that render time goes from a day and a half to an hour or half an hour or 2 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
Then I can get that product out that much faster or upload that much faster. Or, hey, that project's done. Let's move on to the next one.
Yeah, I think that's an important point, and one we think about quite a bit is what is the efficiency gained in terms of who's waiting on whatever that process is,
right?
And what's the cost of that wait? And if it's a film shoot and we've got to get the files off the cameras, make sure they're backed up and onto some other secondary source before we can all shut down because we've got to make sure we got the shot. That's a pretty serious effort of all those people waiting around for probably one guy or two guys to finish a process. And that's pretty important.
Right.
So I was looking at the NVMe system specs that you guys have, and you've got everything from, the smaller 2 terabyte drives all the way up to 15 terabyte NVMe SSDs. So you're getting good density out of the platforms. And I know you want to be software first, which makes sense, but it also gives you the capability to use hardware that's appropriate or modern, so you can pick up on new things, new interfaces. You're running 100 gig E on these things, which is pretty cool.
Right. Yeah. That's the beauty of being software defined. What happens when the next new things, say we go back, NVMe becomes slow when we go to storage class memory.
Yeah. Now we're doing it. Yeah. Persistent memory is all the rage, right?
Yeah. So, okay. I would be willing to say we're probably ready for that. Because, we run in user space. There's an operating system involved, but that's it. Other than that, we're software defined. We'll take advantage of the next iteration of performance as they come out.
Yeah.
And that gives us a great multi-cloud story as well. Because again, we can live wherever. And if you want to be 100% cloud, but you need multi-protocol support and you need some features that you cannot obtain from that cloud vendor, we can more than likely handle that for you.
Yeah, that's nice flexibility to have. It'll be interesting. I'll be interested to see what else you guys come out with. We talked about Edge a little bit. I wonder, have you guys done much at the Edge? Do you have a secret little hardened appliance or something like that?
Not yet.
Okay. Not that you'll admit to anyway.
Not that I can allude to. It's talked about. We have our own private Slack channels. They're like,
right.
We need to do this, do this. It's like, well, what's that look like? That's something that's always kicked around. But we're right now, our primary focus is, we want to keep driving towards the cloud, become more hardware agnostic, as well as become more secure. We want to make sure that if you're trusting us with your data, you can trust us 100%.
So when you say security or more secure, I know you talked about data at rest encryption. What else does that mean to you?
It gives the ability knowing that your data's on there, if something were to happen, bad drive or whatever, knowing that when that drive comes out, nobody's going to be able to get the information off of it. Or right. If they can, there's not going to be any value in that information. Also on the security front, we talked about your array being a couple revs back.
Right.
We rolled out rule-based access control. So for the interface itself. So if you want somebody that can only, look at the system, that's all they can do.
So I can create a user role that's only reporting.
Correct.
And not creation of shares or deletion, maybe. More,
that would be more
scary.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, create all you want, just don't delete them.
Right, yeah. So we have a big push on security this year, as well as push for more features for the cloud activities.
Yeah, well, that's all the rage, right?
Right.
Is getting the data to the cloud, being able to move it around. And still, I think we all collectively need more education on cloud costing and how to how that works and what the movements are. And
yeah, I kind of joke, I have kids and they don't store anything on their computers or their phones. Everything lives somewhere other than our house.
Yeah.
And I think that there's that whole wave coming of whatever, just give me access. I don't even...
Well, yeah. So before we sat down, I talked about I'm in the middle of a possible journey from Mac to Windows. And you're right. Like, if you look at your workloads, mine's probably 92% in the browser.
Yeah.
Yep. And the rest is email client. And that might also be in the browser, depending on what you're using. And so if that's true, then it really does change the way work gets done. Though that said, I'm still running on three different systems. Mostly because, to be fair, mostly because our friends at Lenovo sent me the, I'm using the Yoga right now, their latest gen ThinkPad, which is great. But I also have the X1 Gen 8, which is the non-touch screen, but it's so light. It almost feels like you ever go in a furniture store and they normally have like those crappy fake TVs and stuff. And they're always, I don't know why it is, a furniture store always has like technology that's fake that's like 12 years old.
Right.
Like they sell CRT TVs. But you go in and like a DVD player, that's weird. And you pick it up and it's like, that's what this computer feels like. It's amazing.
That's funny.
I absolutely love it. From that standpoint. But I sometimes get confused and forget which one I'm using and try to rotate the screen over on the non-touch one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'll probably snap it in half one time. But, yeah, I mean, there's all these questions about, I mean, you guys probably don't deal with it as much, but the remote workforce and how do you continue to enable them? And maybe you do. I mean, if I had to share at my desktop at work and now I can't go to work, accessing files is a whole new problem.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's not an area where we would touch directly.
Right.
But depending on where the worker's working. So if you shifted, and I'll go back to the cloud thing again, if you shifted those workers from an office space to a cloud space, so now if they're creating content in the cloud, that needs to sit somewhere. And then what happens to that content that you created in the cloud that you now need back on premise?
Mm-hmm.
So if you had, created users in the cloud, gave them an environment and gave them a Cumulo, multi-protocols file system up there with it. When they were done, they could replicate from that cloud data back down to on-premise and only replicate what they actually needed.
Right.
It's like, oh, we don't need all of that. We just need this couple small pieces.
Well, great. Or maybe the final product, but not all the assets
exactly.
That go into that, right?
Yep, exactly.
So I can't let you go without some hot football talk. I know you live in Ohio, and this is embarrassing for me to admit, but you are a Pittsburgh Steelers fan.
I am. Yep.
How the heck are you an Ohioan? You're some sort of traitor? Were you born in Pennsylvania?
I was born in Pittsburgh.
All right. Well, fine. That's fair.
And if it helps.
It won't, but go ahead.
My wife's born in Pittsburgh, so that's two.
Oh, great.
And both my kids were born in Ohio, and they're Steelers fans.
Oh, you son of a... You took good old Ohio-born babies and turned them into Steelers fans. Those poor children. Although it's been difficult to be either a Browns or a Bengals fan, admittedly. But I don't know. Maybe Burrow turns it around for the Bengals.
I figured the Steelers were going to do something, some way, somehow, to get Burrows before the Bengals did. I was wrong.
Yeah.
But they're gonna pull a trick out of a hat somewhere. And obviously they didn't, but it should be interesting. I look forward to it. I think it'll be fun. Hopefully there's a season. We gotta get that first, right?
Yeah. So we're running this little mini baseball season.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I was actually thinking about downtown where you could go to see the game being played at Great American. So it has no lid.
Right.
But there's a couple buildings across the street where you would have a terrible view.
Yeah.
But it'd be kind of neat to see the game being played with nobody there but the 30 or so players and umps and that sort of thing.
That would be... Yeah, because when you watch it on TV,
yeah,
you know fans are there, but they're not always showing the fans.
Right.
So to your point, yeah, it'd be neat to see it.
Yeah, see them running around.
Right.
Like you still watch it on TV or listen to the radio feed, but you're seeing them. I don't know. there's got to be
There's some. I bet you there's some office space downtown available right now.
Yeah, probably so. Although the stuff on Third Street's a little pricey, little let you peek into the Great American Ballpark. Yeah, I mean football. Hopefully, yeah, they figure it out. Yeah. I've been watching a lot of European stuff. I love F1, English soccer. I'm a long-suffering Arsenal fan, and actually, in racing, the fans make almost no difference from a viewership standpoint. Right? You watch in the cars. And in some ways, it's better because they do less cuts to fans and more shots of cars. So that might be a net win in some ways.
Right.
Soccer, what they've been doing in EPL, at least, has been pumping in crowd noise. So when you're watching the game, you're hearing some noise and it seems like there's people there.
Yeah.
But apparently a lot of people don't like that. So they've got another feed you can go to online with no crowd noise. And that one's kind of neat if they don't filter it because you hear the players talk.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so I know there's been a concern about the NBA return where they're worried that there might be some trash talk that would be generally offensive.
Right.
Especially since they're coming out of, Disney World or something is where they're playing and the MLS is doing something. Yeah. So they might, they were talking about maybe running NBA on a little bit of a delay so they can...
You know, bleep it out.
Bleep it out.
That's probably going to be necessary. Yeah, I would imagine.
I would think so. Yeah. Like, I'm watching on ESPN, they've got the Jordan doc, The Last Dance.
Right.
And not just Jordan, but the whole Bulls team from the late 90s. And they've got a little bit of that. I mean, it's amazing to hear those guys when they're up close and personal like that, backing someone down, just talking, just jawing the whole time.
Yeah. That's interesting. I would think football would be the same too. Those guys are always.
Oh yeah, especially if you can hear the DBs and the wide receivers yelling at each other.
Yeah, with no crowd noise, you'd probably pick up a lot of that stuff. Good or bad.
It'll be bad. There's no good
out
of that other than entertainment. Put the kids to bed early for Monday Night Football and tune in. Well, thanks. Yeah, we appreciate you coming down, Richard, from Columbus area, doing the live cast today, doing the podcast today. It's always great when we can get together in person a little bit safely. And have these conversations. So thanks for coming down. Appreciate you joining the pod today.
Yeah, appreciate the time. This was fun. And I'm sure we'll see you soon again.
I hope so. Thanks again to Richard for making the trek down to Cincinnati. Great to see him in person and had a good time talking Cumulo pretty much all day today. Let us know what you think. info@storagereview.com. If you've got questions or need help with your storage situation, hit us up on Reddit. We're happy to help there and get anyone else involved that we need to help get your questions answered. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another pod. Thank you.